Welcome to Health Styles. I'm Diana Mason, one of the producers of this program that's brought to you by the Center for Health, Media, and Policy at Hunter College, City University of New York. Tibetan medicine is getting new attention in the United States as people seek complementary and alternative means for staying healthy and treating health problems. The Rubin Museum of Art in Manhattan is launching the first comprehensive exhibition on the history, theory, and practice of Tibetan medicine. And here to tell us about the exhibition and Tibetan medicine are two members of the museum's staff. Tim McHenry is Director of Public Programs and Performance at the museum. And Tim, I want to thank you for coming on Health Styles today.
I'm delighted to be here. I feel healthier by the minute.
Good. And we also have Jan van Alphen, who is the museum's Director of Exhibitions, Collections, and Research. And Jan, thank you for coming on Health Styles today.
That's my pleasure, really. Thank you.
Yes, and you say that you're originally from Belgium.
I am. Yeah, I hope that doesn't disturb you too much.
No, it doesn't. Nice to have a Belgian on the air. Good. Thank you so much. Well, let's start just briefly with alerting listeners to what the Rubin Museum of Art is about. I think a lot of people don't know about the museum. It's not that old. Tim McHenry, can you tell us a little bit about the museum itself?
I can, Diana, because I've been with the museum for even more than its almost 10 years of active engagement with the public. So I can tell you a little bit about how it started, but what I really want to say is where we are now, because coming into our 10th anniversary year, we've grown up, as it were, and formulated an approach to some of the universal issues that all human beings confront. We've had exhibitions about the cosmos. We've had exhibitions entitled Remember That You Will Die. We have looked at the inner relevance of identity through Carl Jung's Red Book. We've explored all these universal questions, but essentially through the prism of the culture of the Himalayas. And much of that culture is infused by the philosophy of Buddhism. So we're exploring ignorance, we're exploring sort of the whole concept of mind over matter. We're exploring all these things that we deal with on a day-to-day basis and in our everyday lives, but really from the angle and perspective of an Eastern culture that has a lot to tell us in our day here and now.
And you have a permanent exhibit, but you also, that's quite rich. I've been to the museum on several occasions, and it's gorgeous, and it's quite doable in a day, and just quite thought-provoking. So you have special exhibits, and you're going to have one on Tibetan medicine. And before we talk about the exhibit, I wanted to first talk a little bit about the framework for Tibetan medicine. What is Tibetan medicine like? And help our readers get us, our listeners get a sense of what how Tibetan medicine might differ from healthcare in the United States. And Jan, maybe you can help us think through what is Tibetan medicine.
I'll try to make that somehow clear. Tibetan medicine is a kind of holistic medicine. It means it has many frameworks that are combined in this one typical Tibetan medicine, and maybe the easiest way to compare with what people in general know is maybe Ayurveda from India. It's close to that. Actually, up to the beginning of the 20th century, Tibetan medicine was perhaps the most inclusive scientific kind of medicine that existed before our biomedicine. Because it included Ayurveda from India, the knowledge of long life, Ayurveda. It included Yunani medicine, which means the medicine of the Greeks, the old classical Greek medicine, which was transmitted by Islam to India and which is still very much alive in central India, in Hyderabad, in that area. And it included also Chinese medicine, moxibustion, acupuncture, things like that. And on top of that, it had components of its own original state, which is something like it knows everything from the body inside. So Tibetans have this habit of air burial. They chop the body when somebody is dead, of course, they chop the body and give it to the birch, just like Parsis do in India. And so they know very well what's inside the body, and that's something that they added in their knowledge to this complete set of different kinds of medicine, and they made Tibetan medicine out of that. On top of that, Buddhism is an important component as well. It's following a sort of Buddhist line, the four roots of the Buddha, the Noble Truths, and medicine is a bit developed in the same line as the law of the Buddha. And so in that sense, it's a combination of many things, but the best things that happened in the field of medicine in the East. And therefore, Tibetan medicine is so important. This holistic view is unique. And when one goes to a Tibetan medical doctor, he will also take time for you and ask about everything in life, just to get a good idea of who you are, in what kind of conditions you're living. And with all the information he gathers from you in maybe 2 hours, he will find out what would be the best therapy and what would be best for you. So it's a very broad kind of medicine, and it has proved in the past 1,000 years that it's very effective.
And I'd like you to talk a little bit about the life forces or humors. So when I came to the museum to talk with you all about the upcoming exhibit, there were some questions that I answered to tell me what kind of humor or life force was dominant in my body.
That's right, Diana. You did, didn't you? And are you going to reveal on air what force dominates you?
I think it was phlegm, which didn't excite me too much.
Well, fear not. You see, the thing is, everybody, most people, I should say, have all three forces inherent in them. And it's really only when you have a dominance of one over the others that you might want to try and ameliorate that or balance it out. You know, the exhibition is called Bodies in Balance for a Reason.
Uh-huh.
Adapting yourself or changing your diet slightly or your breathing techniques or taking more exercise. The questionnaire that you got asked you questions such as, how would you describe your skin type or in terms of whether it's a cold or it's clammy or it's hot, or how well do you sleep? Do you sleep sort of fitfully or do you sleep really, really solidly? And depending on how you answer these 14 questions, which are pretty much the sort of questions a Tibetan doctor would either ask you or observe of you as he or she takes your pulse and takes various other readings, that will give some indication of where you lie on this particular spectrum of three forces. And how we as a museum are using this information is really for the visitor to be able to sort of, in a way, sort of self-diagnose their condition according to Tibetan precepts. And then, because each force has a color ascribed to them within the paintings, they can follow that color code throughout the galleries in order to find out how best to adapt themselves to these prescribed conditions. So they can find how better to balance their force by virtue of the color-coded path that they can forge for themselves, not only through the exhibitions, but also they can find out what will balance them, what if they're a wind type, how they can be grounded through what might be available at the shop, or indeed, even some of the menu items in the cafe are color-coded according to whether you should be eating this hot food before 1 o'clock in the afternoon. So in fact, every aspect of the museum itself, all the public spaces are being utilized to serve this understanding of how to maintain good health according to the Tibetan system.
So, with the exhibit, so what's really curious is you're taking Tibetan medicine and you're representing it in the museum, which is quite fascinating. And again, the exhibit is called Bodies in Balance. And where is the museum located?
The museum's located at 150 West 17th Street, close to the corner of 7th Avenue in Chelsea. And you can get there easily either through the L train or the number 1, which stops at 18th Street.
And when does tell us the dates for the exhibit? When does it open?
I leave that to Jan. Jan knows
everything. Okay, well, the exact dates are, it's starting quite soon on the 15th of this month, mm-hmm. March. And it will end on September 8th. So there's about 6 months that it will be running.
So you've planned a lot of things within the museum and outside of the museum as well, from what I understand, to have this comprehensive view of Tibetan medicine. Tell us, you've already said that when we come in, we can go through a series of questions to identify whether we're in balance and what humor might be dominating, and color coding that with foods in the cafeteria. And you also inferred that we would be able to, if my color was green, that I could, in certain paintings, there would be green, and it would have meaning to me in terms of what I might be viewing in the museum. Did I get that right?
Yeah, some of the paintings and some of the clusters of information are color-coded in the galleries themselves. So you just need to look out for the colored markers, and sort of it's almost like a self-guided itinerary, basically. You're traveling through your body of health, and you're navigating the information that's going to be useful to you by sort of self-selecting those particular the color coding throughout the exhibition. So you're more apt to find information that's going to be useful to you to balance your force.
So what about the artwork that you're bringing in? How does that represent Tibetan medicine?
Well, it's indeed also initially an exhibition about the art of Tibetan medicine. And so we are bringing in things that one could expect, but also unexpected things. And we have different chapters in the exhibition. We have two floors, which is a bit unusual for what we normally do in the Ruin Museum. So it's a very elaborate kind of exhibition as well. And on the fifth floor, we will have a sort of introduction on the art, meaning we introduce who is the medicine Buddha, called by Sajaguru with a Sanskrit name. And we will have paintings and sculptures made by the Tibetans of the Tibetan medicine Buddha of by Sajaguru. And for instance, we have an extraordinary and rare painting from Dung Huan, the Grotus in China, of the 9th century, that came over from the British Museum. And it's the very first painting ever made on silk and found in those grottos that we are showing over here. Apart from several bronzes and other paintings, we call them scroll paintings of tankas, representing the medicine Buddha. He was a kind of saint in the Buddhist pantheon, accompanied by 8 other medicine Buddhas. And we also show how in chapels of the medicine Buddha in Tibet, there is a whole group of protectors, frightening protectors that protect the medicine Buddha. But in that part of the show, we also show who is Yutuk Yonten Gampo, the 12th century initiator of the 4 tantras, the secret knowledge of medicine in Tibet, and how it was followed up in the 17th century under the 5th Dalai Lama with the creation of 79 to be correct, tankas paintings on medicine, which were a sort of guideline for doctors, for students in medicine, and that gives the complete materia medica of Tibet as a big book full of cartoons of illustrations. It's not a book; it's 80 different tankas, but it goes in all branches of medicine, from pediatry, gynecology, to psychiatry. Everything is there already in the 17th century. So these tankas are shown on the fifth floor, together with how Tibetan medicine was transmitted and the whole history of Tibetan medicine. This is more or less the real art part of the exhibition, and then we go to the fourth floor, where we deal more with the practice of Tibetan medicine, and of course there also there are quite a lot of it's all art what we show, but art in the real sense of paintings and objects and sculptures. But there we go more into the practical things, like external therapies, like the link with astrology, which is so important in all the oriental kinds of medicines, its foundations, the roots of Tibetan medicine, diagnosis, the different types of diagnosing, urine diagnose, pulse diagnose, tongue diagnose, and from there we go into the pharmacology, because Tibetan medicines are for the moment so popular in China, and they're very healthy. These ingredients are found all over the Himalayan region, and they're so effective that at the moment we find it all over the world. So we will deal with that also, Tibetan medicine in the whole world. And that's a bit, in a nutshell, what the exhibition will be showing.
So let me just remind listeners that you're listening to Health Styles. I'm Diana Mason, one of the producers of this program, and we're talking today about the Rubin Museum of Art's upcoming exhibit, or by the time you hear this, it may already be in play, called Bodies in Balance. It's a very comprehensive exhibit around Tibetan medicine, and talking with us is Tim McHenry, who is Director of Public Programs and Performance at the museum, and the last voice you heard was from Jan van Alphen, the museum's Director of Exhibitions, Collections, and Research. And Jan, I want to go back to you. So on the fourth floor, I want to know, are we going to be viewing urine? You said that urine diagnostics, and I wondered, and then you said tongue diagnostics, and I thought, am I having to stick out my tongue to get passage to the fourth floor?
What a great idea, Diana. I think we should make that obligatory. But funnily enough, you'll be invited to do so in the restrooms. Remember I said every public area of the museum is going to be involved in helping you understand your health better. Well, in the restrooms, you'll have some advice about the use of urinalysis, that's true, but you'll also be given some indicators about what happens when you look at your tongue. And so you'll be able to use the restroom's mirrors as a means of reflecting your tongue and also reflecting upon your tongue and its particular condition as to whether you can tell what force you might be if your tongue is this particular color or this particular texture. But none of this would be useful if you weren't able to put it into practice. So there will be actual sessions on Wednesday evenings in March through to early May, where you can actually have your pulse read by a doctor, a Tibetan doctor, on stage, yes, in front of 150 people. I know that sounds daunting, but on the other hand, this is the way we've got to do it. And you can have, there will be a urinalysis session. In fact, that's on Wednesday, April the 9th, if anybody wants to sign up straight away after listening to this. And there's also, Jan alluded to the fact that psychology is very much part of Tibetan practice, as well as astrology. So there's going to be a dreams analysis session on April the 16th and an astrology session on May the 7th. So those are just four examples of the sort of interactive programming that you can take part in if you come to the show.
And I want to point out that I have been talking with you all at the museum about Hunter College School of Nursing's involvement in the museum, bringing students, bringing faculty, and you are very open to having group visits to the museum during this time, as well as other times. But also, I know that we are doing a session on visual thinking strategy and how to use observation, develop observation skills and critical thinking in our students through coming to a museum and observing what's in the exhibit. So can you say a little bit more about organized visits to the museum?
Yes, I certainly can. It's very easy to book a group visit because you can do that online, and you get a guided tour as part of that experience if you want to buy into that particular offering. But the fact that if you do have a guided tour, the guides are all trained to exactly enlist your observations in the analysis of what you see as a group. And so I think particularly people in healthcare, if they come to this exhibit, they will certainly not only sharpen their skills, but, you know, the whole skills of observation in Tibetan practice are so important. I mean, a doctor will look at your skin tone, will look at your eyes, will look at your tongue, will feel your pulse, will spend some time with you understanding your background and, you know, how you're sleeping. I mean, this is a broad view of your whole being that is being put under examination here, because nothing in Tibetan medicine is deemed to be active in isolation. It's not about, I've got a sinus infection. No, that is part of, or that is symptomatic of some other larger condition. It's not in isolation.
And I might point out that I had hoped to have on today's program a colleague of mine who is a nurse who has lymphoma that is not curable. And she has been treated by actually the physician who treats the Dalai Lama. And she has done this now pretty much long distance. I think once a year she's able to get in touch with him. But he has prescribed herbs that initially her oncologist, sort of poo-pooed. And then when her blood work remained really good, he finally said to her, I'd like to take a sampling of those herbs and test what's in them, analyze what's in them. Now, of course, the herbs change depending upon how she's doing and the physician's assessment of her, that include the urine and the tongue, looking at the tongue and I think pulses as well. So she has been quite pleased with her ability to integrate Tibetan medicine into her treatment that has enabled her to actually avoid some chemotherapies that aren't very effective anyway. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure you're probably getting lots of people saying, yes, I'm actively using Tibetan medicine. Are you hearing from people already?
Well, I can attest for that in the sense that, I did a comparable exhibition like 17 years ago, and at that time, the husband of my niece had blood cancer. And, he was at the end of his thoughts. He had no response anymore in academical hospitals and so on. So I gave him the advice to go to one of the doctors in Nepal, Tibetan doctors that I had met. And he went there for 3 months and he came back and his blood was much better. And then he went back again for 1 month. And, that's now 17 years ago. And he's completely cured since then. And I can't just say that Tibetan medicine cures cancers and so on, but in any case, something happened with him, and till now he's very much alive. And so it can do something, and also mentally to your attitude towards living healthy. So I think there are a lot of merits that we underestimate, maybe.
Yes. And I want to commend you all for this exhibit. I think you've looked very carefully and thoughtfully at how to create a rich exhibit, a rich experience around the art that is there and what people will have available to them. And I really encourage our listeners to take advantage of this opportunity to see the exhibition, and tell us what the website is, Tim.
It's rubinmuseum.org.
And that's
R-U-B-I-N Yeah, rubinmuseum.org.
.org. And is there a phone number for more information as well?
Yeah, it's 212-620-5000.
One more time?
212-620-5000.
Well, I want to thank both of you for coming on to Health Styles today and talking with us about this important very interesting exhibit, Bodies in Balance, at the Rubin Museum of Art. We've been talking with Tim McHenry, Director of Public Programs and Performance at the museum, and Jan van Alphen, the museum's Director of Exhibitions, Collections, and Research. Thank you both for joining us today on Health Styles.
Thank you so much, and stay well.
Yes, and I want to thank listeners for tuning in today. This program is brought to you by the Center for Health, Media, and Policy at Hunter College, City University of New York. You can follow us online at our blog at www.centerforhealthmediapolicy.com. That's centerforhealthmediapolicy.com. I'm Diana Mason, one of the producers and moderators of this program. Thanks for tuning in, and stay well.